All right, good morning, everybody. This is Human Anatomy, Wednesday, February 5th. And here's our lecture. Got some more information from your SI leader here up on the board. You might want to jot that down, take a picture of it. I'm not sure if I got this into Blackboard yet or not. Maybe I did, I can't remember putting it in, but it should be under that button, supplemental instruction. If not, I will do it very soon. And let's see, anybody have any questions? I'm going to turn some of these lights down. How's that? That might work pretty well. Let me know if it's still too bright in here. No questions? Okay. Now let's take a look at the schedule first. So where are we in the class? Yeah, so February 5th, Wednesday. We're still in tissues. We're going to finish up tissues today, more than likely. And then Monday we're going to have a lecture on integument. You know what that is. And then on Wednesday, some introductory material on bones, skeletal system, skeletal tissue. And then in about a week and a half, you have a holiday on Monday. So don't come to class that day because I'm sure campus is closed. But you do have an exam the Wednesday thereafter. Right? So today's a Wednesday. That exam looks like it's in 2 weeks from today. So be aware of that. And these are the chapters up through 6, but not chapter 3. So including bones and skeletal tissue. And here, of course, are the page numbers that you should be familiar with. All right. Any questions on that schedule? And then practicums are the week after that. The first practicums in lab. I'll go over the lab schedule when we get to lab, when you come to lab. All right, so. I'm going to go here. Some lecture slides. Let's get some pictures. Okay, let's look at this slide. Get this over here. Pull this one back up. So we're doing pretty good with tissues. You now know how many general types of tissues are there? The major kinds. 4, that's right. And then you should know on the tip of your tongue what they are. And of course they're epithelium, connective, muscle, and nervous tissue. They all have different specializations. And we're going to learn about them as we go through the class. So last time we looked at epithelium, and an epithelium has to be characterized, and there's 2 main ways that we characterize an epithelium. One layer is by, what do we have over here? Layers. Another way that we characterize is by shape. That's right. And so we want to include both of those terms when we tell somebody what kind of epithelium we're talking about. Like, for instance, here is a stratified squamous epithelium. Here's a simple squamous epithelium. All right, now why do we call this squamous, even though these cells down over here at the basal surface look square, look cuboidal? Why is that? Yeah, you got to go through the apical surface to see the shape of those cells right up there. Great. Okay. Did we get into connective tissue at all last time? No, I'm not sure we did. Right, but we looked at a number of different kinds of epithelia, like cuboidal, columnar. So let's start thinking about connective tissue. Right, connective tissue. Let me jump right to some of those slides. A good place to start with connective tissue is right here. It's not a micrograph. It's a nice illustration, so it's a simplified illustration of what connective tissue is all about. And when I look at this slide, it looks a little bit more complicated than epithelium. Remember, epithelium didn't have blood vessels, didn't have space between the cells. All the cells were glued very close to each other. You had one columnar cell right up against another columnar cell. And when we look at this tissue, I see one cell here, and look, you have to jump way over here before you run into another cell. Or if you're on this cell, you got to jump way down over here to find this cell. So there are big spaces between cells in connective tissue. And it's the stuff that's in this extracellular space is what's important in a connective tissue. Not so much what's inside of a cell, but the things that are secreted into the extracellular space. And it's so important, it gets its own name. And we call that the matrix. So all of this stuff is the matrix, but the matrix does not include the cells. So what do you see when you look in the matrix, the space between cells? You see some stuff. I see fibers. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I see three different kinds of fibers. These big, thick, strong ones are collagen fibers. That's the name of this protein. If you pull it from end to end, it really doesn't stretch. It doesn't break. It's super strong. It's like a steel cable or a Kevlar cable. Super, super strong. But if you pull it from side to side, if you pull it from here to here, guess what can happen to it? It can rip and it can tear apart pretty easily because that's not how it's been designed to withstand tension. Right? So when you use these kinds of fibers are in tendons across joints, and if you use a joint properly, right, then these tendons get stretched from end to end. They're nice and strong, but if you twist a joint somehow, then these tendons no longer experience tension from end to end, but also from side to side, and then these things can rip apart pretty easily. All right, so collagen, we see here is the thickest. It's the strongest. You see another kind of fiber?
Elastic.
Is it as thick as collagen? It is not. It's thinner. All right, so it is not as strong, but it has a different kind of property to it. Right, when you pull it from end to end, it stretches, and then when you let go, because it's elastic, it goes back to its original position. So this is good for putting in parts of the body that can move around a little bit. They'll experience a lot of tension, but you want those things to go back to their original location when that tension is relieved, like your ear. Bend your ear down, like that. Bend your ear down, and then let go. What happens to it? Does it stay down? Does anybody stay down? I haven't found anybody like that yet, but I would like to. Okay, no, it flops back up because what kind of proteins are in that ear?
Elastic
proteins, right. All right, what about, is that the last kind of fiber you see here in the matrix? You know, here's a really thin one, reticular fibers. They're not really strong. Reticular fibers can hold some organs together that are deep inside body cavities, and so they're protected within that body cavity. But if you experience trauma, severe trauma, that trauma can force things around inside those cavities and those organs can rip apart easily because reticular fibers are not strong. They're super, super weak. And maybe an organ starts to rip apart. Somebody goes in there and says, oh yeah, we got some hemorrhage here. Well, let's just sew this organ back together to stop that hemorrhage. Well, you know what? These reticular fibers are so weak, you can't even sew that organ back together. Won't hold on to a suture. It will just rip. So when that is happening, you try to improve the condition of that patient, it actually gets what? Worse. So you can't suture together. The only thing you can do is remove that part of the organ that's bleeding profusely. And a typical organ where that happens is the spleen. Maybe you're aware of spleen. A lot of people get splenectomies when they experience trauma. That's the reason why, because the spleen only has reticular fibers, which are weak. Okay, so those are the three main fibers. Where do you find these fibers once again? In the matrix. All right, so that's one kind of stuff that we have in the matrix. There's another kind of stuff that is not fiber. All right, so here's a fiber, but we have areas like this. So that's what we call ground substance, and it's a jelly-like material or spongy-like material. It doesn't contain fibers. Its job is to hold water in the extracellular space. So it absorbs water and holds it. And then things can move through that water pretty easily to get from one cell to another. So that is why it's there. All right, so that's the matrix. It's got fibers, you know, three different kinds, and then the ground substance, which holds water. All right, what about the cells? I think on this slide, I really only want you to know one kind, maybe two kinds of cells. This one right here, I can see it like grabbing onto these fibers. That's supposed to signify that this cell is secreting this fiber into the matrix. It's responsible for its synthesis and its position. So this is a fibrogenesis cell, but we don't call it that. It's what? A fibroblast, right? It makes fibers, fibroblast. And I see another fibroblast over here. They're separated, right, from each other quite a bit. And then maybe right here, fat cell. Nobody in science really calls that a fat cell. That's what? An adipocyte. Probably you should just use that term instead of a fat cell all the time. Adipocyte. And C-Y-T-E just means cell. Adipose is it's lipid. All right, what else do we have in here? Another reason why I can tell this is not an epithelium, besides that there's fibers and besides that there's a matrix, look what we have right here. Here is a blood vessel. Do you ever find blood vessels in epithelia?
No.
The answer is no, right? It's always going to be devoid. Okay, so that are some important characteristics of generally of connective tissue. Let's take a look at some connective tissue. This is the one that looks the most like that illustration. I see collagen going all over the place. Right? I see some collagen coming up this way and up over here and down over here. It's not packed very tight. These collagen fibers are separated from each other quite a bit. This is what we call areolar connective tissue. It has some collagen, so it's sort of strong. It can resist stretching in all different directions, but it's not super strong in one particular direction. And it also has elastic fibers, so that it does stretch out, guess what happens? You let go, it goes back to its original position. But I see some nuclei of some cells that are maintaining the matrix right here, and you should know the name of these cells. These are fibroblasts. I don't see any adipocytes or any other kind of tissue right here. When I see this pattern, I just think of a stained glass window. So it's easy for me to recognize. And can you tell this is not epithelium right away? Yeah, because the cells aren't packed close together, right? They're far apart. Areolar. This will be really easy for you to recognize. A good slide to start with underneath the microscope to see in lab. All right, another kind of connective tissue. Kind of looks like a sponge. Right, and this is really an atypical, highly atypical connective tissue because here's a cell, and there's the nucleus and some cytoplasm, and the cell goes all the way around to over here, and where is a neighboring cell? It's right here, right next to it. But what did we say, connective tissue? How's it made? Huge spaces between the cells, not so in adipose. Where's adipose? Adipose, so adipocyte, this is an adipocyte, not a fat cell, right? Make sure you know that's an adipocyte. And so that's a little bit different. The important thing in adipose connective tissue is this droplet of oil or fat inside the cell. So it's an intracellular. In adipose connective tissue, the important stuff is intracellular. In all other connective tissues, the important stuff is extracellular in the matrix. That's why I said it was atypical. Right. And, of course, these cells are packed close together. That lipid doesn't pick up any stain, so it just looks like a clear space, but there is oil inside of these cells in a vacuole containing a fat droplet. This is a pretty high magnification, and I see really dark fibers right here, and it's highly branched. It looks like branches on a tree, a dead tree or something. These are reticular fibers. Right, so reticular fibers are not long and straight like collagen, not slightly branched like elastic, but highly branched. Right, so they kind of go all over the place, but what can you tell me about reticular fibers? What's noteworthy about them? They're very weak, that's right. It can hold some organs that don't move around very much, but if they experience any kind of trauma, they rip apart, and here is a good example of one of those, and that is a spleen. Right, so that's pretty important to see. Let's go to this one. All right, well, what do I see right here? I see a nucleus, and then I see a bunch of fibers. And these fibers are all going in the same direction. They're not crisscrossing. I don't see any coming in and out of the plane. They all line up parallel to each other. This is an example of dense connective tissue. As a matter of fact, dense regular connective tissue, which means all these collagen fibers are lined up with each other. This is an example of what we would see in a tendon. And that tendon should only experience tension from one end to the other, not from side to side. And that's how these collagen fibers are arranged, right? From end to end. These then are nuclei of what kind of cell? Fibroblasts, right? Fibroblasts are secreting these fibers into this space. What do we want to call this space in a connective tissue? That is the matrix. Yeah, it's the extracellular space. Okay, so now don't forget, on a practicum, I'm not going to set up 20 or 30 or 60 microscopes, but I'm going to show you these pictures that you have in your textbook. And so you should be able to develop an eye for that. I got a couple exercises that might help you with that. And of course, you should be able to label these lead lines as well. Maybe with just a little bit of a twist. Maybe I'm going to show you this slide. One question would be, name the tissue. What would you like to say when I say name the tissue? No word bank. You have to know what it is in your mind. Yeah, dense regular. What? Dense regular, and could it be epithelium, nerve, muscle? No, it's definitely connective tissue. So put that all that down. Don't say dense regular muscle. Ah, somebody will, but don't, right? Because it's not muscle. It's a connective tissue. You can abbreviate connective tissue CT on a practicum because there's not enough room on that line. All right, here's a little curveball for you. One question might be, name these cells right here. What would you want to write down on that line for an answer for that question? Name the cell. The correct answer would be fibroblast. Some people might put down nucleus or nuclei, right? Nuclei, because there's two of them. But what is a nucleus? Is it a cell?
No.
No, what is it? It's inside of a cell, but it's got a name. It's an organelle. It's part of the cytoplasm, but it's an organelle. If I ask for what organelle it is, then of course you'd want to say nucleus. But if I ask for the cell name, make sure that you tell me that it's a fibroblast. All right, does that make sense? Yeah, okay. All right, so here collagen is all lined up together. Here is another dense connective tissue, and I see only collagen and some fibroblasts. But now this collagen is oriented in a whole bunch of different directions, sometimes right to left, sometimes up and down. Here's one that's coming in and out of the plane of this particular micrograph. So this is not as strong in as a tendon in one particular direction, but it's pretty strong in all directions. This is used to make joint capsules to protect joints. Mm-hmm. Right? And there's a cavity inside this joint capsule that has synovial fluid. It just helps maintain the mobility of this joint. We don't want anything leaking out of that cavity. All right, so dense connective tissue could be tendon or could be maybe making a joint capsule. One is dense regular, the other is dense irregular. Irregular just means what? Not everything lines up together, not all the collagen. How strong is collagen?
Very strong.
Very strong. Okay. When I see this connective tissue, here's a cell, and over here is another cell, separated by a large space. You now know the name of that space right here. This is the matrix. Right, and I see a nucleus inside the cell. Here's some cytoplasm of the cell. And then you might be thinking, well, gee whiz, that looks like a cell right there. And I see some stuff in it. Maybe I see some fibers going from this line over to the cell. This is really not a cell. This is what we call a lacunae. It's a little bubble. It's a little tiny little hole or pit, how you want to think about it. It's normal. It belongs there. And these little lacunae we find in cartilage and also a tissue that's similar to cartilage, and that is bone. Bone and cartilage have these lacunae with cells on the inside of them. If it's a cartilage cell, that cell is going to be called a chondrocyte because chondro means cartilage. That's just the way that goes. Chondro, cartilage, anytime. And lacuna is this little hole. Matrix, of course, is all that space between these cells. And when you look at the matrix, in particular, let's look right here. Do you see any fibers? Squint a little bit, take a look. See any fibers in there? No fibers. I see everybody shaking their head. No, that's fantastic. This kind of cartilage, which is hyaline cartilage, where is it? Hyaline cartilage right here. Sometimes we call it articular cartilage. It covers the ends of bones, mostly. And so it protects bones that are moving with respect to each other. It does not have fibers, so it's not very strong. Articular cartilage can be damaged, and some people it wears away. Some people's immune system actually attacks these cells, and that cartilage goes away. What do you call that condition when you no longer have cartilage between bones and joints? That's called arthritis. Yeah, so then you have bones actually rubbing up against each other when this material dies. Hyaline cartilage does not have fibers. It's the weakest kind of cartilage. When I look at this slide right here, and this is pretty high magnification, 720. We don't go to that magnification in lab, so I would see more of these cells. Right? And when I look at more of these cells, it just looks like a speckle pattern. Doesn't look like a stained glass window to me, but it just kind of looks like a little speckling then I know that's going to be a cartilage of some kind. Another kind of cartilage is going to be stronger than this, which means what? What should be in the matrix if it's going to be stronger? It's going to have some fibers. Elastic will be one particular example, maybe. So let's look at the next slide. Oh, I see that speckle pattern. Do you see lacunae here? Here's a lacunae. And what's inside that lacuna?
The cell.
Yeah, and what do we call that cell?
Chondrite.
Okay, that is a chondrocyte. Chondrocyte, because chondro means cartilage, and indeed this is cartilage. Here's the matrix. Do you see fibers in this matrix? Yeah, for sure you do. And these fibers are branched, which is characteristic of an elastic fiber. So this is elastic cartilage, right? Like in your ear, for instance. You can bend your ear, let it go, flop back. Okay, as long as you don't damage these elastic fibers, if you do, then the ear won't flop back exactly where it was. Right? It might take some weird shapes as well. What happens when somebody's ear grows back in a weird shape? What do you call that? I don't know if it's a medical term or not. I'd have to Google it. Cauliflower ear, that's right. And now you know kind of the molecular reason for that. It's because, what, these elastic fibers were broken. They were overstretched. And then the ear doesn't go back to its original shape when it repairs itself. Okay, so elastic cartilage. Here's another kind of cartilage. I see lacunae, and it's just kind of, there's a speckling all over the place. But now do you see fibers in the matrix? It's loaded with fibers, and they're all oriented in one direction. These are collagen fibers, strongest kind of cartilage, so we call this fibrocartilage. All right, so what kind of fibers in fibrocartilage? You should know its name. Yeah, so what's important in histology is not just to know the name of cells, got to know the name of tissues, and also the name of some chemicals that are involved with these cells. So we're gonna look at molecules and cells and tissues, right? And so collagen right here is a protein. Do you know what the building block of protein is? You don't have to know this for this class, but I bet everybody knows. Amino acids, that's right. So amino acids were put together, joined together to make this big long molecule. And then there's sort of some obscure knowledge, but I think it would be good if everybody knows. You need a special vitamin in order to make collagen from amino acids. And probably all of you have sprained a joint or overstretched a muscle or something, and it would be good to know how to rebuild that collagen. Does anybody know the name of that vitamin? Yeah, it's kind of obscure. It's vitamin C. Everybody knows about vitamin C, right? So if you're healing from a broken bone or a joint injury, make sure you have sufficient vitamin C in your diet. Okay. Usually it's not too hard to get in your diet, just from citrus and things like that. All right, so those are the three kinds of cartilage. Here is another connective tissue. Here is a lacunae right here. But now I don't see a random speckle pattern. What do I see? I kind of see circles. I see a small circle, then a bigger circle around it, then a bigger circle around that. These are what we call lamellae. And in the matrix, we do have collagen fiber, so it is strong, but there's something else that's really, really strong, and that is calcium. Calcium ions and some phosphate. Oh, maybe I should move down this thing. Bone tissue. Okay. So there's calcium and there's phosphate. They join together to make a very strong matrix. That kind of matrix, due to calcium and phosphate, resists compression. So bones can hold up a lot of weight, okay, kind of like this column over here. And unlike this column, you can also put tension on a bone. You can pull a bone and it won't break apart because it also has a lot of collagen in the matrix. So concrete, like that pillar right there, doesn't have collagen, doesn't have a lot of fibers. It's great for holding up a building, but if the building starts to pull on it, guess what happens to concrete? It just shatters, right? And then the building comes back down and there's no column there, unfortunately, okay? Unless you put fibers in that concrete column. These circles are what we call lamellae, right? These are lacunae. There's a certain kind of cell that we find in bone. It's not a chondrocyte, because where do we find a chondrocyte? Cartilage. These are what we call osteocytes, and that's sometimes why we call this osseous tissue. Osseous means bone. Osteocyte is a bone cell, a mature bone cell. So you notice that bone, right, is not like that column because it has living cells in it. So bone is a living tissue, right, just like epithelia, right, just like muscle, just like heart. And one reason why it's alive is because here in the, we have a central canal running up in the middle of all of these lamellae, and there's blood vessels in there. There's arteries, there's nerves, and there's veins. And so that's what maintains the life of this bone. Okay. Sometimes you might break a bone. Guess what happens when you break a bone? You break these blood vessels. What happens when you break a blood vessel? Well, you have hemorrhage, right? You have bleeding as a result of that. So that is one of the severe side effects of breaking a bone, is that you could actually bleed to death when that happens. All right. But because bone has a lot of blood, it also means something good for us. When a bone is broken, it heals very rapidly because it can get nutrients and oxygen, and it can repair itself. It can nourish, right, and give oxygen to the cells that are repairing bone. And bone can heal in about 4 weeks, as long as you treat it nice. You don't try to re-break it during that time. That's why bones are casted. And at that site of fracture, bone will even be stronger. Okay, so when you look at this picture, pretty easy to say this is bone because of all of these lamellae. As a matter of fact, it doesn't even look like a human tissue. What does it remind you of? Tree rings, right? But not a botany class. Okay, that's good for today. We're going to look at bones in two more chapters. And another kind of connective tissue, right here. A little bit strange. All right, I see a cell here, and a cell here, another one way over here. So you know it's not epithelium, right? There's a big space between cells. And it's a connective tissue because this tissue right here can connect your lungs with your brain, connect your lungs with your heart, your brain with your heart, brain with your big toe. And what it's connecting is not like a fiber like collagen, but it's a functional connection, right? It can pick up oxygen in your lungs and deliver it to your heart or deliver it to your big toe. That's how things are connected in a functional sense. And so this is a fluid connective tissue, and it moves through blood vessels, so this is blood. And would you want to say blood on a practicum? No, you'd want to say what? Blood? CT. Don't forget CT, right? Make sure you know it's not nervous tissue, muscle tissue, or epithelium. Fortunately, somebody will, okay? But don't do that. All right, so what else on the practicum? You should know that the matrix, right, which doesn't contain cells, is what we call plasma. We might learn about what other kinds of things are in plasma, but that's the fluid part of blood. And then here is the cellular part of blood. Sometimes we call these formed elements. Well, as a matter of fact, we always call these formed elements. We see these smaller circles, which have a little dimple right smack in the middle. Right? There's a little cave, a little concave dimple. And these are red blood cells. And the name for red is erythro. So another name for these would be erythrocytes. And erythro is just a word that means red. Right? Because if you have blood coming out of your body, what color does it look like? It looks red. Because it's mostly these cells right here. They're loaded with a pigment that's called iron, which helps carry blood around in your body. These over here, you might say that they're kind of a misnomer, okay, because they're named leukocytes. This one here is a leukocyte. This one here is a leukocyte. Leuko means white. And they don't look white to you, but that's because they've been stained, right? You've had some cells that from your body that we stain so that they show up nice. But nonetheless, if we were to put a collection of millions of these cells together without a stain, they would look white. They'd look kind of like a milky color. That's how they got its name. There are five major kinds of white blood cells. I see two on this slide, and these two I do want you to know. Here's a lymphocyte, and you can see here's the cell membrane. But look on the inside of the cell. It's mostly what? Nucleus, very little cytoplasm. And that nucleus is nice and regular, no jagged edges on it, nothing poking off. So it's a nice spherical nucleus inside of the cell. That's characteristic of a lymphocyte. And this one over here, a neutrophil, here is the nucleus, and is it nice and smooth? It has all of these projections coming off of it. It has many lobes. It's a lobulated nucleus. And so that's easy to see as a neutrophil, at least on this slide. So on a practicum, all of these things are fair game. Right? And if you want to call that an erythrocyte instead of a red blood cell, that's fine with me. If you want to call this a leukocyte, that's probably not fine with me. What would I want you to label this thing? Neutrophil. Yeah, be specific. Okay. One thing not labeled on the slide, but probably is really important. Here's a cell fragment. That's called a platelet. I mention it because I'm sure a lot of you have heard of platelets. They prevent blood loss. They're not a cell. They're a tiny piece of a cell. They're a cell fragment, but nonetheless, there's still something that we call a formed element. It's still not something in solution. It's just part of a cell. All right, so could you tell this is not epithelium? Cells aren't close together. And of course, the other thing is, epithelium doesn't contain blood. And what is this? Blood. Okay. All right. Okay, so that's the major kinds of connective tissues. Maybe there's another one. Here is the aorta. And these, and it's not very much magnification, it's only 85. These are elastic fibers. And the reason why we're looking at the aorta here is because, let's take a look at this picture. Here's the heart. Here's the aorta. It's the first blood vessel, right, coming off the base of the heart. It's a big blood vessel. So when the heart contracts, it pushes a whole bunch of blood into this artery, and the artery stretches, right? And then when the blood flows out of the aorta, guess what happens to the aorta? Does it get stuck in that position? No, it squeezes back down, right? And that helps move blood through that particular blood vessel. It doesn't really contract. It just does what? It just, by elasticity, it goes back to its original shape. Okay, so some arteries are very elastic. Ones that are close to the heart are elastic. Pretty good for connective tissue. Let's move on to... Yeah?
Is it on the... we need to also know the degeneration function and the location also? Or we just need to know the basic picture and the...
Yeah, good questions. All good questions. And, you know, sometimes I just don't know what you're responsible for specifically. But generally I know, and that is what? The study guide. So if you look at the study guide and there's a question about any of those things, then yeah, that might end up on the test. All right, so that's my definition of what I could put on the test. That's your answer key, right? So end of chapter questions, online questions, exam figures, all of that kind of stuff. What's ever in the study guide. And I can't remember if that particular question is in there or not. Yeah. Oh, I see your question. Yeah, name the tissue and be able to name these lead lines right here. Okay, and then later on in the class, we'll understand where these tissues belong and what job they're doing.
Which they need to know it, right?
Not for the first test. I want you to know the name of the tissue and some of the cells that make up that tissue, some of the chemicals that make up that tissue. sometimes it's really easy to appreciate what that tissue is for. Like if it has elastic fibers, it's made to stretch and then come back. Okay. So a lot of things will just be common sense by the time you get through this class. All right, we'll just be like elastic. Okay. So next is muscle. And you notice over here on your slide, how many major kinds of muscle are there?
Three.
There are three, right? There's skeletal, cardiac, and smooth. Where do you find cardiac muscle? In your heart, because the myocardium is your heart, and it's made up of a special kind of muscle. We call it cardiac muscle. Where do you find skeletal muscle?
Skeletal.
On your skeleton. Yeah, that's why we call it skeletal muscle. So, you have control of your skeleton. Like if you wanted to stand up right now, move your skeleton around, could you do that? Sure, you could just think about it, and it would happen. Skeletal muscle is voluntary. You have control of it. What about the heart? Could you make your heart stop right now? No, right? It's not under voluntary control. It regulates itself to a large degree, but there are also nerves that go to the heart that help regulation. So you cannot control it. But I want to have a quiz right now, pop quiz. Okay, put your books away, get out a piece of paper, we're going to have a pop quiz. Okay, what is your heart doing right now? It's sped up, probably. Okay, because I tricked you. I just tricked you. You don't have to put your books away. So I just wanted to show you that you don't have control of your heart, but your instructor does under the right circumstances, right? And as a matter of fact, you could influence your heart rate by meditating or thinking of certain kinds of things, right? But basically, it's under voluntary control. I mean, involuntary control. Heart, involuntary control. Smooth muscle, involuntary control as well. You don't have conscious control of it. It takes care of itself, or some nerves help its control. So what do some of these muscles look like? Some are very similar. Oh, I'm going to pass through some of these. All right, here is a nice micrograph. You're seeing something that you haven't seen before. Here, what's kind of standing out right away, jumping right out at you? All these stripes are what we call striations, because this kind of muscle, which is skeletal muscle, has a certain kind of internal machinery that causes contraction. That's what the specialization, that's what muscle is there for. It's to contract. Muscles never push on anything, they can only pull. And here is the machinery inside these cells form this repeated pattern, which means what? Well, here's a machine, here's a machine, here's a machine, all the way up and down the length of this cell. It's the same kind of machine, back to back to back to back. A skeletal muscle cell is pretty narrow, and it's long. And do you see any branches coming off of this cell right here?
No
branches. It's linear, right? It's long and linear and pretty narrow. So sometimes we call a skeletal muscle cell, and only a skeletal muscle cell, a fiber. We don't call a cardiac muscle fiber. We don't call a smooth muscle a fiber, only skeletal muscle, because it's long and narrow. And it is really long. At one point in time, it might have been 100 cells that fused together in a line. And so, left over in that big cell that formed from all of those cells or all of the nuclei. So a muscle fiber might have 100 nuclei in it because maybe that many cells joined together. So a skeletal muscle fiber is what we call multinucleate. That makes it different from smooth and cardiac muscle. What else do I want to say? Nuclei, striations, muscle fiber. That's pretty good. That stands out really easy. Right, here's another kind of muscle. You could probably guess this is muscle if you learned about skeletal muscle, because what do you see? Striations. So cardiac muscle has the same kind of internal machinery that causes it to contract. But now, is it long and linear? Oh, but you don't know something. Here is the end of one myocardial cell. Here's the end on the other side. Is this long and narrow? No, it's kind of short, right, compared to a skeletal muscle. So that's one difference. But look at this right here. What do we call that? That's a branch, right? And I can see a branch down over here. Oh, I can see some branches up over here. You didn't see that in skeletal muscle. Cardiac muscle, you have these branching patterns. All right, so that's a difference compared to skeletal muscle. And again, you don't have voluntary control of it. That's another difference. But what's the similarity? Striations is what makes it similar. And since it's just a single cell, it only has one nucleus per cell, which is different compared to skeletal muscle. Oh, you see a nice branch right here? Okay, so here is one end of the cell, here's the other. And remember, the job of a muscle cell is to get shorter. And I can't show you exactly here. Well, I can do it like this. So here's a myocardial cell, here's a myocardial cell, they're short. They're joined together like this, and when they shorten, they could pull apart, right? And then you'd have a hole in your heart. You don't ever really want to have a hole in your heart, right? So when these two cells get shorter, they should still get stuck together. So when they shorten, they all pull together in a certain direction. And the cells are glued together by something here that we call an intercalated disc. There are special junctions, protein filaments that go across from one cell to another so that they cannot pull apart. So they're connected structurally together, but there's also special communication pathways that go through this intercalated disc. When we get to heart, I'll mention that. The heart has to contract as a unit. So when this muscle cell here contracts, it's going to tell this one over here to contract. And when this one contracts, it's going to tell this one down here to contract, right? So not only from right to left, but also from top to bottom. How can it share a signal from top to bottom? It's easy to see right to left. Well, how does it do it from top to bottom? Because of these branches. Right? It can just work its way right down through all those different branches. Hence, that's why cardiac muscle cells are branched. All right, what else do we have? Striated, involuntary control, branched, shorter than skeletal muscle. That's what it looks like. Now here, probably the least interesting slide in your book, this is smooth muscle. You see that it's missing something that you saw in the previous two muscle slides. No striations. Internal machinery is what? The structure is different. The internal machinery is different. We're going to see why it's a little bit different. It contracts in a little bit of a different way. Here is, and it's even hard to see on this, at least for me, maybe if you see color you can see the shape of these cells, but this is a cell right here, not a fiber, right? It doesn't have any branches like cardiac muscle. It's like if you take a football, grab the two ends of the football and pull and stretch it out, right? Okay, so that's what a smooth muscle cell is. You have it in the walls of hollow organs inside your body, like digestive tract, reproductive tract, gallbladder, okay, a bunch of these different tracts. And we see digestive tract right here. All right, so those are the three kinds of muscle. that we have in your body. So make sure you know some similarities and differences between these different kinds of muscle, and of course be able to pick them out. I want to go over nervous tissue. That's the fourth kind of nervous tissue, and I'm not sure I want to look at the micrograph just yet. I want to look at this illustration first. When we get to the nervous system, you're going to see that the nervous system has two kinds of cells. I don't know if I have it on this. Types of cells. Oh, I do. Nice. I don't have to write it on the board. Okay, it has two types of cells. It has a neuron, which we see right here, and a neuron is responsible for transmitting receiving information and transmitting that information long distances very quickly. So if you want to send a signal to your big toe very rapidly, you need a neuron. You don't want to send it via the circulatory system because it takes too long. Right, so neurons send electrical signals. Oh, that also means that your body is highly electrical. Right? You are a very electrical being. Okay, one of the reasons is because of these neurons. Here I see the nucleus inside this neuron. Where you have the nucleus inside a neuron is what we call the cell body. And this is where most of the organelles are located. Right? And another name for cell body is the soma. Soma is just another name for body. Okay? So this is the cell body or soma, contains the nucleus. And then you see some projections coming off the cell body. A projection in anatomy is something that we call a process. If there's a projection coming off a bone, we call that a process. I know we name that process that's on a bone. But these right here, that's not a bone, but nonetheless, they're projections. These short ones that are highly branched, these are what we call dendrites. These are dendrites. This is the receiving end of this neuron. These are acting like almost like antennae. Okay? None of you know what an antenna is anymore, but I remember I had to turn them on my TV set to get the signal just right. Okay, that's the receiving end of a neuron. And then that signal comes into the cell body, and then it goes into this one long process that goes really long. It could be a meter long. Maybe in Shaquille O'Neal, maybe it's 2 meters long, right? Because he's really, really tall. And that signal goes very rapidly from the cell body down to this end of what we call an axon. So this one projection that's an axon is the sending part of a neuron. It sends the signal. So neurons have opposite ends. One end receives the signal, the other end sends the signal to another part of the body. Okay. So that is the general illustration of a neuron. And this micrograph over here has some of these neurons. Here is a neuron. Right, so here is, what did we call this center location? Yeah, it's a cell body. What's another name for it? The soma. Yeah, it's a soma, or cell body. Here's one long projection. This is an axon. Okay, I really don't see any dendrites. Oh, maybe I see some dendrites here and an axon right over here. Not exactly clear, but nonetheless, you can see all these processes coming off of neurons. These are either dendrites or axons. Yeah. Okay, yeah, let's go over that. I don't see an arrow on this slide. I wish there was an arrow, because this neuron receives information and sends it, and it's only in one direction. So if I were going to put an arrow on this slide, would I put two arrowheads or one? Just one. That's right. It's only one direction. It's a one-way street. And I would put the arrow going from right to left. So information goes from dendrite. Start with dendrite. I would start with dendrite. Then cell body. And then axon. Yeah. So maybe you skipped a step. But you know what? We could probably find some examples where the signal starts on the cell body, but it's not very common. Okay?
But yeah. The dendrite to the cell body to the axon, which happens on one neuron.
Yeah, here's just one neuron. This is all just one cell. Just one cell. So if you want to send signals from right to left, you could use this neuron, but if you want to send signals from left to right, guess what you need? You need a neuron that is facing the other way. Okay, and you're going to know the names of those cells, depending on which way they face. Okay. All right, so the second kind of cell, not on this illustration, but I see it in the micrograph. I see some nuclei right here. These are not neurons, but it's part of the nervous system. We call these neuroglia cells or glial cells or support cells. They're just called supporting cells. And they sometimes act like connective tissue. They hold these cells in place, but sometimes they nourish the neurons. People weren't very interested in these support cells. What do I have over here? Neuroglia. Yeah, I didn't want to write that on the board. Didn't want to take time. But here's neuroglia. It doesn't send electrical impulses, but a lot of times it tells these neurons where to send these processes. It directs the development of these neurons. And if these support cells stop working, then this neuron can no longer grow new branches, new dendrites or axons. And when that happens, one thing that happens is that your mind stops learning, right? When you learn something, the shape of this cell actually changes. It has more dendrites. Axon goes to different places. And what directs that activity are these support cells or neuroglia cells. We've got to wait until we get to the nervous system before we look at some more details of these neuroglia. But the two kinds of cells are neurons and neuroglia. Neuroglia are support cells. They help the neurons do their job. And without them, the neuron couldn't do its job. So they're both important. It's more than just neurons in the nervous system that is important. Okay. So I think that's pretty good for nervous tissue. Let me look at all of these slides right here in nervous system. Pretty good. Let's review this one. I think in the first chapter we talked about membranes. And here I see a slide that has some membranes. Here is a membrane that lines the nasal cavity. Here's a membrane that lines the oral cavity. And this cavity attaches the inside of your body to what? The outside. There's a passageway from the outside world into this cavity. Any kind of cavity that has an opening to the outside world is lined by a mucous membrane. Where do I see mucous membrane? Mucous membrane here. Mucous membrane lines a cavity that's open to the outside world. And remember, your digestive tract is open to the outside world on two ends. Thank goodness. So it's not a tube that's closed inside your body. It's open on both ends. So it's a mucous membrane. Okay. All right. So that's one important kind of membrane. The spaces inside your lungs that have access to the outside world, right? Because when you breathe in air, it goes into your lungs. That space, those spaces where the air goes, is made out of a mucous membrane, okay? Because it's open to the outside world. Other cavities that are not open to the outside world, like on the outside of the lung, that should never be open to the outside world, that's a serous membrane. And I think I showed you some serous membranes before. There's a serous membrane around the outside of the heart called the pericardium. Membrane around the lungs, that's called the pleural membrane. The membrane around all your digestive organs, that's the peritoneal membrane. And those are all serous membranes. Serous membranes have three parts to them. Anybody remember the three parts of a serous membrane? Oh yeah, here's a nice slide of that. Let's zoom way in. Zoom. Let's go over here. And then let's go like this. So what do you see right here? Heart and lungs. Okay. And the outside of the lung is not connected to the outside world. So it can't be a mucous membrane. It's what we call a serous membrane. Right? The membrane that's on the surface of the heart, again, is not connected to the outside world. That is a serous membrane, not a mucous membrane. Serous membrane has got three parts to it. And as a matter of fact, I think I want to even zoom in a little bit more. What are these three parts? All right. Here is one part of a serous membrane that lies right on the wall of the body cavity, right on the thoracic wall. Right. And so this is what we call the parietal division of that serous membrane. It's not touching the organ. It's parietal. Right. This is pretty good. So here is the parietal division. It comes all the way up over here, then curves around, and then starts to lie right on top of that organ. It's in a different location, so it has a different name. But it's really a continuation of what? That same membrane. Since it's in a different location right on this visceral organ, because it's deep inside your cavity, a visceral organ is deep inside of a body cavity, we call this the visceral division of that serous membrane, right? So here's parietal pleura, because it's around the lungs. Here's the visceral pleura. And are these two membranes touching each other? They are not, right? I see a little space right there. And that space is what we call the serous space or pleural space. It's filled with serous fluid because this is what a serous membrane. Here is the heart. The pleural membrane does not go around the heart. It is the pericardial membrane that goes around the heart. And there are three divisions as well. The layer that's right on the visceral organ, right on the heart, is the visceral pericardium. The part that's over here, that's the parietal pericardium. And then you have a pericardial space. And there's some fluid in there as well. Not very much. Okay. Maybe at most you'd measure a centimeter between these two membranes. And if it gets to be more than a centimeter, like 2 centimeters or 3 centimeters, if the space gets to be maybe 3 centimeters, guess what this, or as a matter of fact, if this space, if the pleural space gets to be 3 centimeters, what do you think this individual is experiencing? Distress, okay, because the heart can't function. If there's fluid in this part of the pleural cavity, then the lungs can't fill up with air. And it's no fun not being able to breathe, right? Okay, same thing. If there is a lot of fluid in this pericardial space, then the heart can't expand. What does that mean if the heart can't expand in some functional sense? So think of maybe function. If the heart can't expand, what can't get into it? Blood. Yeah, it's no longer air. We're considering blood. And if blood can't get into the heart might contract normally, but if there's no blood in there to pump, what happens to the amount of blood that the heart is pumping? Yeah, not very much, right? So that causes a lot of distress in individuals too. And then that fluid has to be removed from that pericardial space. Okay. Only physicians should do that, because you jab a needle in there and you suck it out. Okay, you just aspirate it out. But you don't want to do that, right, if this is you with this space. But after it's done, you're really happy somebody did that for you. All right, so those are some membranes types. Mucous membranes, serous membranes. Notice just a little detail right here. When mucus is used as an adjective to modify this membrane, it's telling us what kind of membrane it is, right? So that's an adjective. It's spelled M-U-C-O-U-S, right? But sometimes a membrane actually secretes mucus onto that membrane. When we're talking about mucus, the noun, the stuff, then it is M-U-C-U-S, mucus. The spelling is a little bit different, right? So just kind of be aware of that. All right, three main serous membranes around the lungs, pleura, around the heart, pericardial, around the abdominal pelvic cavity. Remember, that's the peritoneal membrane. It's around the peritoneum. What other kinds of membranes? You can have inflammations of these membranes, like pericarditis, inflammation around the heart, pleurisy, inflammation of the pleural serous membrane. Ooh. Around the lungs. Anybody ever have pleurisy in here? I hope not. Maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm a bit confused when you're mentioning the three serous membranes.
The three parts of a serous membrane. Yeah. One membrane, three divisions. Yeah. We got it right here. Let's zoom in. Okay. All right. So here is a lung. Here is the surface of the lung. And there's a membrane right on the surface of the lung. It's one division of the serous membrane. This is what this membrane is the pleural membrane, right, because it's around the lungs. And if it's touching the lungs, we are going to call that the visceral division or the visceral pleura. Maybe you should think of this organ, because the lungs are deep inside of a body cavity. It's a visceral organ because it's deep inside the body, as opposed to a muscle that's not in a body cavity. That's not a visceral organ necessarily. It's more of a somatic organ. Okay, so here is a visceral organ. The visceral serous membrane lies right on top of that organ. Here's another organ, heart. And there's a membrane lying right on top of the heart. That is also that's a visceral. Yeah. But it's not a pleural membrane because it's not lungs, but you know that's the pericardium, right? So this is the visceral pericardial membrane, visceral pericardium. Here is the visceral pleura because it's on the lungs. And then you got a space. That's the second part of a serous membrane. Here is the pleural space around the lungs. Here is the pericardial space. It's a serous space filled with serous fluid. And that fluid might change a little bit depending on which little cavity it's in, right? But we're still not done with the serous membrane because it's got one more division. It's got part of it that is up against the wall that is holding onto that organ, all right? So the lungs are inside the thoracic cavity. Part of the visceral pleura comes over here, and then it continues right onto the surface of the thorax. So it's not touching the lung. This is what we call the parietal division of a serous membrane. So those are the three parts: parietal division, the space, and the visceral division. Just in that order. And it's always going to be in that order from superficial to deep. Okay? Parietal, space, and then the visceral. Okay. And the same thing for the peritoneum, which is on this slide on the other side.
Yeah. So every membrane they have the perianal, they have the visceral, and but between that two, they always have the serous foot.
Only if it's a serous membrane. If it's a mucous membrane, then no. Okay, like the membrane that lines your oral cavity, not a serous membrane, mucous membrane. It only has one part. The membrane that lines your oral cavity does not have three parts, okay, because it's a mucous membrane. Now, one funny thing about a mucous membrane, probably most don't secrete mucus. Some do, some don't, okay. So a mucous membrane, remember, is M-O-C-O-U-S. What a goblet cell secretes is mucus, that's M-U-C-U-S. Just a little bit different in spelling. Other kinds of membranes, they're all over your body. Cutaneous membrane, sometimes people refer to that as your skin. That's a membrane that separates the outside world from your inside world. Synovial membrane is the inside of a joint capsule. So it makes a joint that is freely movable, helps make a joint freely movable. Periosteum is a membrane. Okay, some people in lab know what osteo means. Osteo, osteum, what does that mean?
Bone.
It means bone. Okay, so here's a membrane associated with bone. And the other thing about this word, we have peri. That means something too. Peri means surrounding on the outside. Okay, that's probably where peritoneum came from too. Right? Periosteum is a membrane that surrounds the bone on the outside. Endo, on the other hand, means inside. So endosteum is something that surrounds what kind of organ? A bone, okay. But where is it lining? Something on the inside, a cavity inside that bone, okay. So there are lots of different kinds of membranes around that you have to be familiar with. Okay, well, you might be wondering, how on earth am I going to remember all these different pictures in the textbook? There's some, but you're going to develop an eye form. So I think we got a little time. That clock is weird, so don't look at that. We got a lot of time left. So I want to find something that I call a flash quiz. We have a video of this in Blackboard. I'm not going to run the video here, but I'm just going to go through it manually if I can find it. So let's go here. You see anything that says histology flash quiz? Oh, here, flash quiz practicums. Okay, that's close. And what do I want to do with this? Oh, good. I put it away. All right, so you're going to have to just look at one screen because I don't want to run over there and change it. All right, so right over here, what do you see?
Nothing.
This is a rest station, right? So I just see a square right there. This is a rest station where you don't have to know anything, okay? And then you go to the next slide, like right here. What do you see there? You see a tissue. No, you see mitosis, right? So mitosis, but you can also tell me what phase of mitosis that is. Here is everything lined up right in the middle of the cell. Metaphase, right? Metaphase. Centrioles, nice spindle apparatus, right? So that would be a good question, maybe on a practicum or a lecture exam. Mitosis and the phase would be metaphase. And what's here? Another rest station. Okay, what's this? Well, cells are far apart. Yeah, it's going to be a connective tissue. I see lacunae right here. All right, and I don't see any lamellae, so it's not bone. Maybe similar to bone, but it is cartilage. I don't see any fibers, so it can't be elastic, can't be fibrocartilage. The only last one is hyaline cartilage or articular cartilage, right? And you know the name of these cells. This is a chondrocyte, right, because it's no longer cartilage. And then there's a lot of work. Okay. Next slide. Oh, what's happening here? You see this really fancy stain, the fluorescent stain. Here's a nucleus. I don't see chromosomes. I really don't see chromosomes in any of these nuclei. So what phase of the cell cycle is this cell in? Interphase, not mitosis, right? Okay. So a phase of mitosis would not be proper either, right? It's interphase. And, oh, here's another. What, this is another mitosis slide. And let's see if I can figure this out. I see some chromosomes here, a little space between them. Ah, nice, now I see what's going on. These chromosomes are separating from each other, and that happens during anaphase, right? Anaphase of mitosis. Rest. Oh, what's this? Yeah, this should just jump right out at you because of all of these concentric lamellae, okay, and the central canal. So this is bone CT. Bone CT. What do you have to know? You've got to know that's a lacunae. It wouldn't be bad for you to know that this is an osteocyte, but it's not labeled, unfortunately, on this slide, right? But you should probably know it anyway. I won't test you on it right now. Ah, what do we got here? Some more connective tissue? No, primarily we have epithelium. Here is a nice basement membrane, basal surface, apical surface. What's the shape of the cell? Cuboidal. How many do you see from apical to base, apex to base? One. So it is a simple cuboidal epithelium, right? All, your eye should always focus on this basement membrane. It should be nice and smooth, right? It shouldn't be jagged with cells poking out of it or anything like that. And, what do we got here? Another epithelium? No, blood, CT. Always say CT, right? And you know the names of these cells. I'm going to go just a little bit faster. Oh, what the heck is this thing? Basement membrane. Here's a goblet cell with mucus. What are these things?
Cilia.
And I see, this almost looks like one cell. Yeah, that's a goblet cell. This almost looks like one cell. But over here, it looks like what? Layers, more than one cell. So this is pseudo-stratified, ciliated, and here is what, a columnar cell? Columnar, CT?
Epithelium.
Epithelium, that's right, don't say CT. Okay, pseudo-stratified, ciliated, columnar, epithelium. And what about this? See any blood vessels? No, cells are tightly packed together. Epithelium, and how many layers?
One.
Yeah, because here is the basement membrane, a lot, we call that stratified. And what are the shape of these cells?
Squamous.
Yeah, always go to the apical region. So it's a stratified squamous epithelium. This is probably skin. No, it could be inside your mouth. These maybe look like buccal cells. Oh, we got a lot of time. Don't get too restless. All right, here's a tube, almost a transverse section, basement membrane right here. Here is the center of that tube that is carrying material around. That center of a tube is called the lumen of a tube. And how many cell layers is it? More than one. It's two. You don't say two, you say stratified. And the shape of these cells? They're short. They're not columnar, so these are cuboidal. So it's a stratified cuboidal epithelium. Now here is a really strange one. Shapeshifter. Here's the basement membrane. I sort of see a lot of layers, but we don't classify this one by layers necessarily. And the shape of these cells at the apex don't look squamous, don't look cuboidal, don't look columnar. Alright? These change shape all day long. So we call this a transitional epithelium, transitional epithelium. So it's kind of an outlier. It doesn't fit into any of those neat categories. What kind of epithelium is this? It's not. It's areolar connective tissue. Right, so we go to 1205, right? Yeah, we do. Okay. I'm going to show you how to use this exercise in a little bit. Here's another connective tissue. This is adipose connective tissue. Here's an adipocyte. Here's the nucleus. Here's a little cytoplasm. A strange connective tissue because here is one cell. Here's another cell. What can you tell me about these two cells? They're touching each other. There's not very much matrix in adipose connective tissue. So it kind of violates one of the postulates of being a connective tissue. This oil, this fat, is intracellular. Most everything else in a connective tissue, the important stuff is extracellular in the matrix. All right, the lab this afternoon, you're a little bit, I'm sorry for you guys because we haven't gone over that yet. But this will help you in lab, okay? All right, so adipose connective tissue. Now, how would you want to use, maybe look at one more slide. Oh, what's happening here? What do you see? What do you see? I begin to see some chromosomes forming. I see the centriole starting to split apart. So mitosis is starting. What's the first phase of mitosis? Yeah, so that's anaphase. Don't have to tell me early or late. Okay. Yeah, so that would be, what did I say? Sorry, I'm glad you were listening. Okay. Yeah. All right, so this is what phase is this? I didn't go here. Let's finish up with this one. Okay. So, I see a spindle apparatus still going across all over the place. And I see chromosomes kind of all over the place where the nucleus was. Now, do you see a separation between these?
No.
So this would also be prophase. Okay, this would be prophase. What they call late prophase. I don't care if you know late or early. Okay. Now, if this, that's the hardest one to differentiate from anaphase. But remember, in anaphase, there's going to be a lot more order of these chromosomes, and you're going to have a separation between them. So you're going to have to develop your eye to see that. So how would you use this? The video is going to go like this. You got a rest station, and then it's going to show you that, and then you have to tell me what that was, that flashed by. What was that? Let's do it again. I'm going to go backwards. Okay. Yeah, so don't look at me. Don't look at me. Look at the slide. Right? So what is that? Can you put a picture back in your mind of what that was? What were some of the salient features of that picture? Chromosomes all lined up in the center of the cell. So obviously mitosis, because you could see chromosomes, and metaphase, right? All right. So I even think the video goes like that even sometimes. Okay. All right. But that's okay, because here is a rest station. And the next slide is? What was that? Oh, I hope you were looking. Hyaline cartilage. CT. Interphase. Anaphase of mitosis. Wow, we could go through all of these. Oh, way too long a period of time, right? That's bone connective tissue. Okay, even faster probably on the video. All right, so you saw that, that was less than a second, right? You could recognize that. On a practicum, you're going to have a minute and a half. So you're going to be bored out of your mind on that practicum, which is okay with me, right? So practice this, so that's bone. What is this thing here? It's an epithelium, a simple cuboidal epithelium, right? What's this here? I should have gone like this, right? That is what? Blood CT. All right, so here's a fast way you can study all of these slides, probably less than a minute, right? And just do it over and over and over again, and you'll be in really good shape, right, for that practicum. And also you're going to practice stuff for the lecture exam. Okay, I don't know how many pictures. There may be 25 pictures, something like that.
25.
Maybe 30 pictures, somewhere between 25 and 30. But just the ones that are in your lecture. Oh, my goodness, look what I forgot to send around. The sign-in sheet. Okay, well, there's no sign-in sheet for today because it's right here. There's not enough time to sign the sign-in sheet. But next time, remind me to sign the sign-in sheet around, okay? Have a good weekend, you guys. I'm going to turn some lights on. Okay, so nobody trips.
On the graphical about the mitosis.